The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
Yappa Toy, and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me for the Blizzard edition, we have Mr. Hassan Godwin on the phone.
It is cold. It is very cold. Like, it's been warmer in my apartment this last, like, today, but over the weekend, it was like I didn't have windows. That's how cold it was in here. Like, I had no glass in my windows.
Oh, let's
I'm sorry.
See.
I wasn't supposed to use this opportunity to complain.
So on this week's show, Elman and Jenny Fildy interviews filmmaker Sean King. And that's it. So before we do any of that, we have to take it away with the news.
It's Morphin time!
The news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi.
For your Wi-Fi.
As well as the fine folks at the Big Apple Con, of which we are the official radio show of, celebrating 26, 7, 8, 9 years of comic bookness and pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled for November the 21st of this year. Tickets are not on sale now.
No, you can't get tickets.
Also want to give out shout-outs for our Patreons, of which there are Danny Grillo, Woodwing Director Jared Burrell, Newsday Famous Dresden Media, Shadow Rabbit Art, Yasmin and Ray, The Hurricane, and Millie Portes. If you want to have your own shout-out, go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The little button on there takes you right to our Patreon page. Also, on the It Came From Radio website is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a newly discovered power source. The war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 is on sale right now, and Issue 2 will be out this year. Oh yeah, usually you say something after that. So as always, we
well, it did. Woohoo! That was,
man, this is a
I'm
great
sorry
so
my brain is compromised.
As always, we start off with the sad news. Cartoonist Scott Raymond Adams died recently from cancer. Scott is perhaps most famous for his Dilbert comic strip. I remember the comic strip existed. I remember there was a cartoon based on the comic strip. I probably have read two of the comic strips in my entire life, and that's the extent of my Scott Adams knowledge. What about you, Hassan?
He, you know what? It was a tremendous contribution. He wasn't a good guy. I'm sorry. I'm sorry he died in such a terrible way. That's all I can say about him.
All right. Well, he was 68.
He wasn't a great guy at all, from my perspective.
That's I don't know. Okay, I'll go with you. So yeah. Moving on for the next bit of, and final bit of sad news, actor Donald Douglas also died recently. As of this recording, no cause of death has been announced. While Donald was in a handful of TV shows and movies, he is perhaps best known for his role of Admiral Darcy, which is Mark's father, not me, in 3 of the 4 Bridget Jones's films. He was 92. I've never seen any of the Bridget Jones's films.
So, I've seen them, but I have no idea who Admiral Darcy is.
Well, he was the guy's father. Was it Mark's father?
Yeah, he was.
Patrick
he
Dempsey,
was,
I think, was Mark. Or was it the other guy,
Patrick
Colin Firth?
Dempsey. No, that was Colin Firth.
Okay, Colin Firth.
Mark
I've never
Darcy.
Seen the movies. I don't know. Anyway, he played his father.
Yeah, well, I mean.
You saw the movie?
No. I've seen the movies. I don't remember his dad. That's too bad. It's too bad that he's dead and that he has passed on. I'm sure he was a great person. He did great things. But we are ill-equipped to to eulogize him because we haven't seen any of his work, unfortunately.
But
so
you
it's sad
it, you
dead.
Just blooped it out of your mind.
What? What'd I do?
You saw his work. You just don't remember him.
I don't remember the dad. Like he
no, you said
had a lot.
That you said that we haven't seen his work, but you have seen his work. You just don't remember him in it.
No, he probably had a line in all three films. Okay, a line as opposed to a part. Okay, you're making it worse than it actually is.
He was 92. Let's just move on for that.
That's a good. I mean, he doesn't get a letter. But that's a good age. So I'm sure in 92 he was sick of it. He was like, I'm out of here.
Oh, man, that's the worst news that you've ever done.
You're the one who you know, you're trying to blow my spot up. Yeah, you move on.
Okay, now for another sad
news. No woo. No woo for
from
me.
The.
That's a lot of nuts!
Department. The new Avatar sequel has held on to the number one spot in the domestic box office for a fifth week in a row, pulling in an additional $14.4 million in ticket sales, beating out the new horror film sequel 28 Years Later Part 2, Bone Something or Other, which came in
which I didn't even bother to see because I saw the first one, and I was like, no thanks.
Well, see, that's why it came in number two. It made $12.5 million in its first week of release. For those of you keeping track, the aforementioned Avatar is currently the highest grossing film of this year with $367.1 million, followed by Zootopia Part 2 with $394 million. Now, because both of these movies came out last year, the numbers are askew, because this year Avatar has made $117.7 million and Zootopia has raked in $56.1 million. Now, Hassan, have you seen Zootopia 2?
No, I have not.
Okay, but you've seen Avatar, and I've seen Zootopia.
I have.
So between the two of us, we have contributed. Well, you've contributed to making all this money.
I have contributed to James Cameron's, you know, of course, because he's so destitute. Like, he's, you know, he's just practically going broke right in front of us, right?
He's like, I need to have some money.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. But I told you, don't bet against him. I told you that. I told you that weeks ago. Like, there was conventional wisdom that said that people were not going to respond quite as well to this Avatar movie as they had to the last two. But there was reason to believe that it might not have done nearly as well. But you do not bet against James Cameron.
And here's an interesting fun fact. The first Avatar, when it came out, they thought it was going to be the end of his career because that weekend there was a giant blizzard in the East Coast. And then it came back the following week. And here we are in another blizzard. So maybe there's a tie between Avatar movies and blizzards.
Well, this is what happens when you bring movies out in the winter. There's a chance of a blizzard because it's the winter. But they also thought that he wasn't, because he had said something very, like, insane when the first movie was being made. And it was derogatory language that he used in his pitch for it. He said, get ready to have your eyes so-and-so'd, right? And people were like, dude, you can't talk like that. You get it, you know, why would I want to go to this place if my eyes are going to be assaulted, right? Basically what he said. But he didn't say assaulted. He used a vulgarity to describe it.
Okay.
Because of how beautiful the film was supposedly, that it was just going to be a visual feast and you were going to go crazy and everybody was going to love it. So they were saying part of it was that he had sunk so much money into it. The other part of it was that he uses vulgarity. It's like, oh, he's lost it. He doesn't know what he's talking about. No one's going to go see it just because he uses language. And then the snowstorm. So there was every logical reason as to why this movie was not going to do well at all. And then it just did. Not only did it do well, it did exceptionally well.
Yeah.
So, and then he, on top of it, and this is the last thing I'll say about it because I know you want to move on top of it, he waited 10 years to bring out a sequel. I'm like, nah, I do what I feel like it. I do what I want. I'm James Cameron and I do what I want. And I remember having this argument with this kid. It's like, no one's even going to care. I mean, the Marvel and Star Wars have happened since then, and they're way bigger than Avatar. Nobody even cares about James Cameron. It's like, yeah, man, I really wish I could find that kid now. two movies later, $2 billion movies later, I really wish I could find that comment. And just like, hey, remember this? You numpty. But anyway, please continue.
Well, he's an adult now. But moving on.
He's still a kid. Anyone with that kind of a moron take on anything is a kid as far as I'm concerned. But I get your point. Please go.
But moving on. From the Get the AI Out of Here department, none other than San Diego Comic-Con has announced that its art show will no longer allow AI art. San Diego Comic-Con has already banned AI art from its artist alley, but now they have their art show, which is also banned. For those of you who don't know, or care for that matter, the art show is a, quote, separate gallery-style displays of fine art pieces inspired by comics, pop culture, fantasy, sci-fi, and related genres. It's open to the public, and no entry badge is required to enter, browse, and or buy art. Both professional and amateur artists submit original works like drawings, paintings, sculptures, jewelry, and other unique items for display and sale, and it typically takes place at the nearby Manchester Grand Hyatt Hotel, and it also displays the nominees for the Will Eisner Comic Industry Awards. So there you go. Now they're the separate marketplace art thing. Like, no AI over here either. So no AI in the building, no AI over there. What are your thoughts?
Excellent. I just gave you my thought, my very brief thought. Excellent. Look, it's if they're having an art contest, it's a contest of skill and and know-how and ability and perspective. And not even being derogatory about AI, the whole point of AI is that you can do it without any skill. It doesn't belong in that niche. That's all. If you could do it easily, then it doesn't belong in a niche. It's like
it's easier. It's like if you had you're not special.
If you had the Christopher Reeve Superman, if you had one of those crystals, right?
Yeah.
And you went to an architecture party and these guys are showing off all the buildings they built. And he said, I just threw this crystal a thousand miles away and it turned into a mansion. They'd be like, yeah, that's impressive. But you used a completely different alien technology to build it, to build your mansion, to have your mansion build itself. We're not on the same level. So you may leave Superman. You know, they wouldn't kick him out because, I mean, Superman could kill all of them. But, I mean, they'd have every reason to be like, that's not quite the same, Mr. Superman.
I always like to describe AI art in this way, that you have to look at if you have a 1,000-piece puzzle and you take one piece from a 1,000-piece puzzle, and then you have 1,000 1,000-piece puzzles, and you take one piece out of each of those 1,000-piece puzzles and make a new puzzle. That's what AI art is, because it's basically stealing from something else, and nobody gets compensation and or credit for the other pieces that you're taking from. So that's why I always say that it's bad.
And theoretically, you can't even copyright it. So someone else not only has to, after you've labored to produce some piece of work from AI, someone can come along and just copy the exact same thing and claim it's theirs. And there's already enough thieves at those conventions who steal genuine artists and their work and claim it's theirs, as you've seen.
Yeah.
We've had these conversations. So, like, AI, that's not even – for AI, it's not even going to be a problem. Like, it's not even – it wouldn't even be a contest.
Right.
So – it's good to, you know, it's good to narrow it down. It also, if your show is predicated on getting artists to be part of it, you got to give them incentive to want to be part of it. And then just to tell these people that they're going to be competing with some kid named Sam who's been, you know, who has a gaming chair and a lot of bandwidth, and he was able to make art just like your art, that's not going to incentivize. I mean, if they asked me to be part of it and I found out that I was going to be competing with those guys, I would be disincentivized to want to do it.
Fair enough. So moving on, the Oscar nominations are in, which, more importantly for our fans of the show, and to me in particular, that means that the Razzies have also been announced. The live-action Snow White ties with the War of the Worlds remake with 6 nominations each. Snow White has the worst picture, director, worst supporting cast, and on-screen combo, which is all 7 dwarves, worst remake, ripoff, or sequel, and worst screenplay. The War of the Worlds has worst picture, director, actor, which is Ice Cube, worst screen combo, which is Ice Cube and his Zoom camera, worst remake, worst ripoff, or sequel, and worst screenplay. Of note, the Star Trek Section 31 film snags 5 nominations for picture, director, actress, which is Michelle Yeoh, supporting actress, which is Casey Rawl, and screenplay. Smurfs gets 2 for the worst on-screen combo of James Corden and Rihanna, and worst remake, ripoff, or sequel. And a special Just for Hassan award gets Jared Leto, gets 1 nomination for worst actor in Tron 3. What are your thoughts about that?
That's not fair. Tron should have got way more awards.
Have you seen Snow White, Smurfs?
No, I have not. Section 31. But I mean, I saw Section 31, and I saw Tron Ares.
Okay, so Section 31. Worth 5 nominations?
It's not a good movie. It really isn't a good movie.
Okay.
I don't know what I don't really like the Razzies. I don't like mocking art, you know, and mocking people's creativity, like officially having an official event to mock someone else's creativity. Whether I like the movie or not, I could review a movie and say I didn't like it. That's fine. That's within my purview. But to award it things and just be cheeky like that, I don't really dig that stuff. Too tough. But I haven't seen the Snow. I can't believe the Snow White movie is that bad, though. I just have a hard time believing it's that bad.
So
even Section 31 isn't that bad. It's not a good movie, but it isn't like worst ripoff of a screenplay. Like it's not on that level of bad, in my opinion.
None of these movies have made our list of either as the worst and or honorable mentions at all. So they can't be that bad. But I do want to say that I did see War of the Worlds. And that movie...
I avoided that movie on purpose, by the way.
That movie is so bad. It's good. It's like it went all the way around. It's just, I think that movie exemplifies what the Razzies should be. It's like, it's just a joke. It's just, you know, like, that movie was so bad. It really was bad. And you watch it, but you
I get it. I mean, I'm not...
And I got to say, as bad as it was, it didn't even, like I said, it didn't even make my honorable mentions because it was just so bad. And doing my research, as I normally do after I watch a movie, I like to go back and see the trailers, or go back and see the interviews and see all this stuff. So I did my little homework on War of the Worlds. And first of all, the movie was filmed during the pandemic. So right there, you get some passes.
Got to give it a pass, yeah.
The director and the director was interviewed, and he's like, "We did the best we could, and people are watching it. It was one of the highest watched movies." He's like, "You know, we made the money. People are watching it. How bad is it?" You know, he's like, he's gonna get him work because people, you know, he's getting the numbers regardless of how quote unquote bad this movie was. So I'm like, you know, he's got a point, and that's kind of what you think about it. Like you make something, and the object is you can get people to watch it, so you can make another something, and he did that.
True, you're right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like mocking art like that is just kind of. You know, I mean, if it's bad, if it's really bad, you can't expect people not to talk about how bad it is.
And we've talked about many of these things, but like I said, but in this situation, specifically, I'm just hitting on War of the Worlds because, like I said, I have seen War of the Worlds, and like, woof. And even Ice Cube was like, man, I was home. I it was little direction. They told me to react to this and this. That wasn't even on the screen. I got paid. What do you want from me? Like. He just kind of take it as that.
He just bailed. He just bailed on the whole thing. Man, what do you want? I'm not. So, I need the money. He literally just said I needed the money.
War of Worlds is a new genre type of film. I forget it has a name. So you remember when, what was that? Blair Witch Project came out. That was the new genre.
Yeah, the found footage.
Right.
It was found footage. Yeah.
The War of the Worlds is a different type of movie, which was...
it's a selfie footage or something like that, right?
Yeah, it has a specific name, but there was like a horror movie that had that. That's basically you're watching a screen of what's happening, and you're supposed to be watching it on the other end. And everything that's
they tried
that
also
that
with like Cloverfield. Remember the guy was running around
That was
around
Cloverfield.
With a
camcorder. That was Shaky Hand. Right, that was Shaky. That was
Shaky
that genre. But this is a computer screen movie, like the movie Searching with John Cho, the Harold from Kumar, Harold and Kumar. Yeah, John Cho.
Don't know it.
That movie is an amazing movie. And that movie, yes, that movie was so good that the director and the writer and the creator said that movie is the first ever 100% pausable movie, which means that at any point in time you're watching that movie and you pause the movie, everything on screen makes sense, is connected to the movie, and is connected in some other way. And then on top of that, that movie that they did was about the guy trying to find his daughter. It has a second movie in it. And if you watch all the stuff and you pause it and read the little things that the guy has, all the ads and all this and all that, it's a second movie. And it's a completely different thing. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing how good this movie was and how many levels of really good that movie was. And it's the same genre. So it can be done. So I know it can be done.
What was it called again?
Searching with John Cho.
Searching.
And so I know it can be done. And this is the other side. This was the worst possible movie ever. But it was just so enjoyable. And people got a chance to just riff on it because that's what it was for. You know, sometimes you just need some crappy movie to come along. And it's like Sharknado. Like, you just kind of watch it like, all right, this is just what it is. It's just, that's what it was. So that's my thoughts on it.
I haven't seen it, so I have no thoughts on it whatsoever. I avoided that movie. Like, you know,
yes,
like
I
really like War of the Worlds. Like, I love the book, and I love the 1950, I think 1953. I think it's a 1953 movie. I think it's an amazing movie. And I like most of the Steven Spielberg version.
Right.
Yeah. There's a lot of it I don't like, but I like a lot of that adaptation.
No.
So to watch, I just couldn't sit through Ice Cube on his cell phone. Like, you went from Tom Cruise running away from aliens with shields on them and, like, fighter jets throwing missiles at them. And we're talking about Ice Cube on his cell. I couldn't do it. I will do it one day. One day I'm going to be bored. And
that's the point.
And I'll do it. And then I'll be like, either I'll be like, I should have seen this earlier. This is amazing. Or I'll be like, yeah, I didn't need to go here. I didn't need to see this at all.
So we're almost out of time. So, Sean, final thoughts?
My final thoughts is, keep AI out of all spaces.
My final thought is this. Go see Searching. That is a great movie. And
yeah.
You'll see what I'm talking about. And then, if you have time, go see War of the Worlds after you see the contrast. So that is it for this segment. Everybody listen to us on the air. We'll see you next time. For everybody else, stay tuned for more. It's Game Fun Radio.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com.
Cosplayers, exhibitors, and celebrities, oh my! Stand by, Connecticut. Dragon's Rum Comic-Con is coming March 21st, 22nd at the Danbury Sports Dome, located at 25 Shelter Rock Lane. It will be Danbury's only premier comic convention. This event is your one-stop shop for everything pop culture, featuring celebrity meet and greets, exhibitors selling the coolest products, various discussion panels, a gaming area, and of course, cosplay contests. Tickets will be sold at the door or get them online via ticketspice.com. Link for tickets are on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Visit drcomiccon.com for more.
Hi guys, this is Xenia Seberg, who played Zev on the show Lex, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
BKG Productions LLC, your ultimate audio transformation partner. Got audio that needs a magic touch? I am here to elevate your content. Specializing in professional audio editing, I can clean up background noise, plosives, and pesky S sounds. From podcasts to songs, I've got you covered. Whether it's an interview, music track, setting volumes to precise specs, email bkgvobiz@gmail.com or go to fiverr.com, search for BK Graves 1, and trust me to make your sound sparkle.
Meet Grimlock having fun on It Came From the Radio.
Me, Greg Berger, also.
My neural net processor is linked to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for my Wi-Fi. The more I listen, the more I learn.
Hi, folks. Andy Robinson here. And like all the good things in life, it came from the radio. Thank you.
Step into the fantastic world of cool kids comics and toys at 2055 Hempstead Turnpike, East Meadow, New York. Discover Comic-Con exclusives, the latest Funko Pops, and a treasure trove of new and vintage toys and comics. Whether you're a collector or a first-time visitor, we got something to spark your imagination over here. Visit Cool Kids Comics and Toys today. Let your adventure begin, huh?
Hi, I'm Alina Watko. I play Hyrel on Star Trek Discovery, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Comic Books for Kids is the largest charity in the U.S. for comic books, toys, and pop culture items to children in hospitals and cancer centers. Donations of toys, books, action figures, Funko Pops, or anything pop culture related can be made to this organization. Find them at cb4k.org.
Hi, this is Amy Jo Johnson, writer-director from the film The Space Between, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
This is Carrie Steller from In the Girls' Corner, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
You're listening to It Came From the Radio? Who's this? I'm not telling you, but I'm just going to tell you that I'm munching on a papaya, can't get much flyer. They call him the king, but you can call me sire. So I'm in the studio with the fun, funny, super enjoyable, enormously talented and loved filmmaker, director of photography, show film director, Sean Quincy King. He specializes in feature films, commercials, music videos, short films, documentaries, and he's known for many films, including Like Me Deadly, which I loved. I was a fan. I thought it was very cool. Lost Suburbia, a really cool vampire movie, which you can see on Amazon, starring Russ Camarda, called Night for Day. And Russ plays like the most sweet, almost timid, shy vampire ever. So that was very interesting. I was highly entertained. Love that. I'm really entertained by everything Sean does. He's not boring. A lot of people are boring, but I'm not the judge of who's boring and who's not. So now I made a little cameo in his movie Screamwalkers, we're going to talk about, and the copycat mask from the movie by Fun World should be in Spirit Halloween this Halloween. I say should be because until something is done, I don't say it's happening because I respect my own credibility. That's just how I live. If the movie's not on the screen, it didn't happen. Even if it's being edited, it didn't happen. He's also known for the Gooligan series and the list goes on. So Sean Quincy King in the building.
Yo, that no one could live up to that intro, but thanks. And I'm feeling really boring now, suddenly, so...
No, thank you. You never bored me. No.
I made it to your show. This is amazing. Thank you. I'm honored.
Finally, right?
Finally. I'm here. I've made it.
All right. Jen's back. Enough of Drexel. That was fake lame Drexel. Real Drexel's going to come here with the lamp. Drexel out. All right. So here we go. First question. I'm working on a film set, I always think to myself, you go and learn today because there's always something to learn on every single film set, even if it's like how many things you can plug into an outlet or how much rain you need to come down to see the rain on camera or how big the snowflakes have to be to see the snow. There's all these little things and lessons you learn every set. So what's a lesson or a few lessons that you've learned doing film production?
Oh, I got stories, Jennifer. I got stories about, let's just put it this way. I've been doing this for probably close to 30 years. And probably about four or five times, if I say we, it's just whoever I was working with at the time or whatever, but myself and other people, I mean, we've had guns pointed at our heads. We've been in scenarios where cops showed up, news showed up, and it was all due to bad producing on the producer's part. Now, I was a producer on some things that happened on, right? No one got hurt. But there was a few times where there wasn't proper set protocol and there wasn't a PA outside of the door where we were handling guns or something like that. Mm-hmm. And a police showed up and then things got really out of hand. And then the news shows up. You could probably Google Long Island film shoot goes bad or something like that. And I'll probably something that I was working on. But the technical stuff, it's like, yeah, we can talk about that for days. But it's more like the stuff that I like to learn on set is it's like really how to deal with personalities. Because, like, mostly everybody who gets involved in this stuff has some kind of ego, problem, or they're eccentric. And, you know, just to kind of understand those personalities is tough, because you're coming into work, you don't know anybody. It's not like you're going to your 9-to-5 office job where you can, you know, you could get vibes quickly and kind of like, you know, you have time to figure people out. No, you don't have time to figure people out on a set. You get there, you have your breakfast burrito and a coffee, and 10 minutes later, you're working with strangers. So, yeah, that's like the toughest thing, is to figure out people's personalities and who is who, and, you know, who not to be dick to, and who to be nice to. And, you know, like, that's the most important thing, I think. And that's essentially, yeah, you got to do a good job, but you got to be nice. You got to be, you know, you got to be cordial. You got to be smart. And that's what's going to get you, like, the call back. That's right. What's going to get you a recommendation is, yeah, this person's cool. Yeah, they know what they're doing, but they're cool on set. They're nice. They're funny. Mm-hmm. Whatever. You're going to have a good – because you're spending, you know, 12-plus hours with these people day after day after day if you're lucky and you're working. So you got to be somebody that somebody wants to hang out with for 12 hours a day and you know.
Yeah.
Go through all that with. So that's like – all that technical crap is boring, but, like, that's the fun stuff to figure out.
Right. No, I've thought that about you multiple times, because we've been on different sets where you're running the set. I've been on sets with you where you're hired as director of photography and you have to follow someone else's rules. So I've seen you in different environments, social environments. We shot at my house, different environment. And, you know, you're always pleasant. It's nice to be around. And I never feel drained. I always feel like excited about doing this. After spending time with you, and when spending time with you, and other people maybe will drain me, or I'll feel like haunted, like I watched a horror movie and like I need a freaking exorcism after hanging out with them. But, you know, that goes a long way. And I've thought many times that, oh, Sean likely, you know, before I met you, probably got things done because you're nice to be around. And I'm sure in your new state, you're going to do well, because people will say, wow, I like this guy. I want to see him again. Not like, I hope I never hear from him again. It doesn't matter how good you are.
There's people who say that too, you know, definitely.
You hope that you hope they never hear from you again?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally.
You know, like, I'd love to know the story behind that.
It's their problem.
I got to say, though, like, not to toot my own horn, but I'm sorry. Everyone that I have a problem with, they have a very long list of people they have problems with. Like, if you ever hear me complain about someone, I'm guaranteeing you there's probably 100 other people, or maybe they're on the cover of a news story for being a monster. So they're so I same with you, I feel like.
Yeah. I would say that we're both pretty good judges of character. So, like, yeah, it's their problem. It's, you know, if somebody's got a problem, they're going to be a problem to anybody. You know, even if you're sorry. Can we cut that out? Sorry, Jen.
Yeah. We got editors. Don't worry about it.
Okay, good.
We'll make the editor earn his money, you know?
All right. Yeah, so whoever has a problem with you, they're probably going to have a problem with anybody else on set. So, like, the fun thing to do then is just to, like, sit back and watch that unfold. And hopefully not be a problem. No, don't be a part of it, you know?
Right. But,
Even like, we were in your house and we were shooting in your house, and I see the couch behind you. Yeah, we had to move that couch. You know, because we need the space in that living room area right there. A normal person would be like, oh, my God, like, what are you doing? You're just like, you know, you're turning my life upside down.
Right.
But you, like, you understand, like, what it takes to do it. So I've been in scenarios where we're in somebody's house and they're losing their minds. You know, they're not expecting what we're doing. Because these are micro-budget movies, low-budget movies that we're doing. Yeah, and a lot of the times it's like a friend or a family member, and you're going into their place, and you're just like, you're just creating the most chaos possible, and they don't understand what the hell's going on. And that I get, like, if somebody has a problem with that, it's like, yeah, I get that. You know, someone who's new to the game and doesn't expect that kind of thing to happen, it could be crazy stressful. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, we're going to Glenn McBride, we were going to shoot in a hotel. So here's a little cautionary tale. I knew this because I heard a little bit about this before Glenn. I've been shut down at the Caesars. I drove all the way to Atlantic City a couple of years ago. Not my film. I was hired for makeup and a lot of money involved. And when they were carrying all the sandbags in, Caesars Hotel shut it down because they didn't have a permit. And the guy was young and he was practically crying. And he ended up paying everyone a half a day. So thousands and thousands of dollars were lost. And I said to him in front of the whole film, so I said, I know this is, you know, really intense for you, but do you think you'll ever forget this? And he's like, no. And I said, well, great. You're 29. I'm, you know, it's probably 40 or 39. You're never going to do this again. So it's a very good lesson. But yeah, with Glenn, we had three different hotels that all caused us problems. And we even confirmed, you know, Glenn did what we should have done. So guess what? We're going to shoot my house. And we're going to turn my house into a brothel. So that's
okay, yeah. All right. Yeah, that's another great way to learn, is to make those dumb mistakes. Not that Glenn and y'all made a mistake, but it's like, yeah, maybe get that in writing. Talk to everybody at the location.
In writing.
Yeah, and make sure whoever's there on the day knows what's going on. Because I can't tell you how many times we've showed up at a location and somebody behind the desk was like, nobody told me what's happening, you know?
Right. Yeah, like, that's okay. Why...
Give me a list of who's going to be there that day. I will call them and tell them what's going on, you know? But seriously, those mistakes or those kinds of things those are the kind of things that wake you up at 1:30 in the morning, or just make all the phone calls the day before. Talk to everybody, tell everybody everything so you can sleep through the night, you know, and do your job in the morning. Yeah, do your proper job in the morning.
Think like a lawyer. Think of every single thing that could go wrong and prevent it. Oh, the guy's going to forget? Make sure it's texted. Make sure you have a piece of paper. Make sure you have written. Maybe even record the conversation. I don't know. Whatever you can do, because hotels are a pain to shoot with. If I ever – I will avoid shooting hotel, whatever I can do. So let's watch the Screamwalkers. Screamwalkers movie. All right, totally switch gears. Now, you directed Screamwalkers movie, and according to HorrorSociety.com, Screamwalkers is the 90s shot-on-video scream parody that you didn't know you needed in your life. So what's this movie all about?
Well, I think the reviewer was Mac Brewer on that one, and I know Mac from going back. So I asked Mac, I'm like, can I change that quote and say it's the scream homage that you didn't know you needed? Because it's not a parody movie. Like, people really think that Screamwalkers is like a scary movie parody type of thing, or like a Wayans Brothers thing. It's like not that. It is very 90s. It's shot on home video, so it feels like a home movie. And it's a slasher movie. It's a murder mystery whodunit. A masked killer is killing people in a small town, and there's bad cops on the job, and kids keep dying. And as the mystery unfolds, you realize that it's not your average killer. It's something way more supernatural and weird, and it's tied to Egyptian mythology. And there's a mummy. There's a mummy in it. So, you know, there's monsters and mummies and a lot of dead bodies and good looking dead kids.
I have the movie. I saw the movie in theater.
You were in the movie, Jennifer. You were in the movie.
I'm in the movie, but the thing is, I couldn't really tell you exactly what happened, because the Egyptian, the mythology, I'm going to have to like watch it again, because I really couldn't accurately tell you. And also, full disclosure, maybe part of the reason is why I shot all day out east as an actor. I didn't think I was going to make it. Rushed to the premiere, which I think you won. Screamwalkers won, I think, Best Movie at the Long Island Film Expo.
Yeah, won Audience Choice Award, Best Movie,
Well, I got there and I walked in with Frank Sabatella and I took an edible right when I was sitting down. And I offered him one. He said, no, you know, good. Say no to drugs. It's not great. But then it started kicking in. Then I was like, oh, this guy's sitting next to me. Like, I'm sorry. He's judging me, you know, whatever. So maybe I didn't remember all of it.
You were sitting next to Frank and Frank was judging you?
I don't know. You know, I offered him an edible. He was like, no. So I'm like, oh, I'm a druggie now. And now I don't know. And the end of the movie was so trippy that I didn't even know really what happened. It was so out there. It was so unexpected.
Yeah. I wrote it with, I got to mention Bob Heckman. He kind of helped me, you know, break the story and co-write the story. And then Will Pintarich, who was the real creator of the project pretty much, because he created the mask for the masked killer in the movie. So it was just like, we were just like, look, this is like a $12,000 home movie. We can do whatever the hell we want. We had some amazing contributors from a fundraising campaign, like a Indiegogo campaign that we had to like deliver for. But, you know, we're just like, what do you want to put in this? Hey, let's make a cat creature. You know, let's make the cops a bunch of idiots. Like, you were a bad cop in the movie. You played a cop and you were a terrible, terrible cop. You're a bad cop, Jennifer. And then we were just like, at the end, we wrote Glenn's detective character in later. And then we were just like, you know what? Like, there hasn't been a good mummy movie in a while. So, like, yeah, we got the Egyptian cat god, you know, Bastet was the kind of spoilers everywhere. But we were just like, yeah, like, let's just have a freaking mummy. Like, so there's the mummy in the college. And, yeah, it was just like, why not? It was just like a just throwing things at the script. And it was, you know, I don't even know why most of the things are there, just because they're fun. And, you know, I think that
it's fun.
Like, there's so many, like, movies that get made and financed, like millions of dollars are put into these movies. And they're just, like, they're really well done and they have great cast and creators, but a lot of them just aren't fun. Like, they're just kind of like, I don't know why I don't want to watch Hereditary, like, you know, 50 times or something like that, you know, and it's a good movie, but I'm hoping, like, you know, Screamwalkers, it's 65 minutes, you know, there's like kills and there's a mystery happening. So I think, like, you probably want to watch it a couple of times at least just to, yeah, just like you, if you're, you know, if you're on an edible and, you know, like you want to make a little bit more sense of it or something, you know?
Yeah, I've only seen it like one and a third time. So, you know, I'm going to wait a little bit so it's out of my memory a little more and then watch it again in a different state of mind, you know?
Yeah, there's really not much to it. It's a lot of mumbo jumbo. It's a lot of creative
stuff. Really.
But it's fun. And what we did was a little story about, like, the mask.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, my friend Will Pintarch created the mask and the title of the movie for, like, one of his haunted attractions, like, out there on Long Island, Farmingville. Yeah, so he put it as a character in one of his haunted attractions, where you'd go down a dark trail in a park, and, you know, these characters would jump out at you and scare you. Yeah. And the Screamwalker was one of those characters. It's extremely derivative and familiar to the Scream movies. It's not a ghost face. It's definitely not a ghost face. I'm supposed to say that every time.
Yeah.
And so we always knew that the company that makes the Scream mask and owns the Scream, you know, the ghost face mask, we knew that they were also on Long Island. They're a family company, local company on Long Island. So we always had it in the back of our minds, like, we're making this. We're not telling them we're making this. We don't think we can get sued because of the mask is very similar to the Scream mask. We don't know, though. So when we finished the movie, we went to the office of Fun World, the company that owns Ghostface from Scream.
Yeah.
And we told them what we did, and we showed them the movie. And the fella who named Ghostface, and pretty much he's the guy that he's on the Scream set right now, or the Scary Movie, making sure they use the masks right. His name is RJ Torbert. Yeah, he's kind of Ghostface's dad. Yeah, he watched the movie. He liked it. He was just asking a bunch of questions. Like, he's like, where did you get these actors? You only spent like $11,000. Like, how did you do it? And he's like a Ghostface fan himself. He's written books, Ghostface books and stuff. Because he has the copyright, he can do whatever he kind of wants.
Wow.
So we were like, you know, Will and I were like, well, are we in trouble, or like, what's going to happen? Do we have to, like, you know, what can we do with this movie? And they were so cool. RJ Torbert was so cool. And everybody at Fun World was so cool. They were like, no, you're not in trouble. Change this little thing in the title of the movie, like the title font, like the treatment of the title. And we'll work with you and put the mask out. Like you said, it was supposed to come out last year, but you know, somebody's having fun with tariffs and, you know, kind of, you know, tariffs on, tariffs off, like a light switch. So it was supposed to come out last year. So you know, let's hope it comes out this year and you'll be able to go get the Screamwalker's costume, the copycat killer costume, at your favorite Halloween retailer or online. So let's hope that happens.
Super cool. Definitely. Yeah. And you said it was like a $12,000 budget. See, I was just talking about this. I have a short that isn't public yet. We did like a soft friends and family premiere, but it's only 12 minutes and it was $12,000 for the short that I saw him. So So, you know, budgets, you can do something that's unbelievable for low, high, have a huge budget, super boring.
Look, anyway. That's like the real test, all right? If you think something's going to work, if you're if you're convinced that your story is good and you can get good actors and a good crew, you know, I've made shorts for 10, 15 grand, and yeah, they look cool, and they're, like, the actors are great, and, you know, it looks like, you know, it looks high end, it looks professional.
Yeah.
But there's always like the, like, you got to hire a crew then, and you got to feed everybody, and like that takes a long time, and you usually only have like, you know, 2 or 3 days to shoot like a 10-minute movie or something like that. Or you can take the $12,000, get a camcorder that does all the work. You know, you don't have to change lenses. You don't need a crew working on the camera and moving it here and there. And a crew with lights everywhere. No, like we had, I made sure it was going to just, it was going to be streamlined. It was going to be on a camcorder. We had like three lights on with batteries on them. You can just move them here and there, and I could do all that work. And then still like focus on being creative.
Yes.
And direct the movie and not be just like under duress and stressed the entire time. And, you know, like watching the, you know, the clock, the minutes go by and crap.
Yes.
It's not fun. It's just not fun.
No, it's not fun. No, yeah. No, I didn't go to Goldman Sachs and work there. I got into filmmaking for fun. So I'm actually very happy that, you know, our shoot at the hotel didn't work, because then I can't micromanage, take all the time. You know, a hotel's going to give us 3 to 5 hours. I said, Glenn, let's just turn my freaking house into a brothel. And we have to shoot for 3 days instead of one half day.
You see,
take your time.
Yeah.
Take your time.
Have the time. When you're forced to be creative like that, that's where the magic is. All right. When you have the money and you can throw your money at a problem, you're not being creative. When that location goes away or you lose that money, damn, now you have to be creative. And how creative are you? How are you going to handle that? Are you going to have a meltdown and quit, or are you going to like spin it into something that could even be better? And who knows? Yeah. Like this, you know, your place as the location might be way more unique than a boring hotel room, you know?
Oh, definitely. I want to actually, the movie's kind of based on True Romance, so I actually want to have kind of coloring that was in the fish tank scene with Drexel. There was like red and different mood lighting, and it's actually going to probably end up costing more, because I'm probably going to paint some walls red, and I'm probably going to put some curtains on windows and set design. So it's actually probably going to cost more, but I like to micromanage, and I like to have a space where I can control the temperature, the water, what you're eating, the lights, and you can't paint walls at a hotel. So I like to control. I'm a control.
Yeah, and you can have like your whole like week beforehand just to set it up exactly how you want.
Right? Yeah. So
totally.
Switching gears now for me, full-time acting, film production, special effects, makeup, prop work, everything, movies, film, commercial, it's definitely taken over my life. And, you know, we've talked about this many times personally. So let's talk about this here. Now, my life is definitely not balanced. According to normal outside viewers, you know, looking at my scheduling, they'd say this is completely unbalanced. And there's definitely a long list of normal human behaviors, like hanging out, going out for lunch. I don't know the last time I did that. Going out for drinks.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
with
what's
you.
That?
I don't know.
What the
a year
hell
ago.
Does that? Yeah,
late night parties.
That.
It's been a while. I mean, the summer is going to be absolutely insane because I'm earning the reward. So I'm making up for it this summer.
Good.
It's happening.
Yeah.
It's happening. Vacations, I don't like vacations. I'm just weird. My dad doesn't either. It's never going to change. But that saves a lot of time. So now I've skipped all of these things, and there's a very long list of other things that I've skipped. It's really been a testament to my discipline, which I realize I have more discipline than I thought. So now back to you. To devote so many hours per week, or weeks per year, or years of your life to creation, you really have to skip out on some activities to make time. You can't do everything. There's 24 hours in a day, and these people say, oh, you can do everything. No, you can't. You can't unless you can make the day 300 hours, and you can't. So what sacrifices have you made to be this productive?
Well, not going to mention, like, the relationships that I've had that are just, like, you know, smoldering ashes and, you know, behind me, you know, a couple of miles of those, that takes a toll. Certainly, like, yeah, if you can't figure out that balance, you're screwed. And I've never been able to figure out the balance. But it's also like you said, it's like vacations. Like, you don't take a vacation. This has to be your vacation. Your film has to be your vacation. Look, you can take $12,000 and you can go to Vegas and that could be gone in a half an hour, right?
Yes.
And what are you gonna, like, what's the story there? Is that a good story? Is that a good memory of yours? Or can you have like a banger of like a 3-minute movie or even a 65-minute feature length movie that's, you know, streaming that people are watching out there? It's like, mm-hmm. if it's not a movie, mate, okay, it's a boat. Go buy yourself a boat. Like, whatever it is, it's just like our sickness is that I think we're just like, we're probably obsessive, compulsive, obsessive about some ideas that we need to just get out to make space for the next damn thing that's going to enter and you got to get out. Like, that's just it. It's a sick personality thing. I've always tried to have, like, you know, if I make new friends on a movie and I always consider them friends or family, like, I always try to, after the shoot, have a cool wrap party and, like, you know, have screenings or even just have a party and invite people and just try to continue that relationship to just to say, like, look, this isn't all just like, you know, this isn't just a creative thing. But right. even now in my new place, like, I have to make friends. I'm 50 years old in Minnesota and I got to make friends. It's like the worst scenario to make friends. But like my only way in now, my only like social kind of training is like, hey, let's like let me find the filmmakers. Let me find like the nerds here. You know, so I'm prepping a short film we're going to shoot in probably 2 or 3 weeks here with a local actor producer here. So that's like, I've been trained to just be creative and find the creative people. Because like you said, those are the interesting people. They're not boring. You know, they take risks. Like, you know, they're creative. They're risk takers. And like, and if you're not getting invited to parties or anything, you know, like, make your own party. And in our case, like, a film shoot is a party sometimes. So
We did the Victim No More shoot here. You know, you, me, Bob Heckman, Dino Castelli was here for a little bit. Christina, Klein, Ken. I mean, it was really, really fun because I genuinely, Rob, who thought I had prop potatoes, he thought my potatoes were props because there's so many potatoes. I was like, yeah, these are, you know, prop potatoes. We're going to put them in the oven. You know, they're real potatoes.
Right.
But I had so much fun with you guys. Honestly, you know, I've done partying. I've partied with, you know, the Crown Prince of Burma. I've partied with diplomats and princes in D.C. You know, D.C. people, you have like princes and it's a whole different demographic than the Long Island Italian crew. But I did some crazy partying, and I gotta say, I'm sorry, but I've had way more fun. I don't know, way more fun, but it's the same, maybe the same level of fun with you guys here shooting The Victim No More. And also, this Screamwalkers rap party, that still goes down in my top 500, top 100 most fun. I've had so much fun. So,
oh, I'm in the top 500, the party.
I'm trying to be accurate. Right, your credibility.
It might be the top
100, but I don't know. I've had a lot of fun moments. But the point is, you don't have to go out and drink and spend money. You can actually make money and get paid and be productive and have more fun than ever.
I think it's just like, it's like, yeah, we're not average humans. You know, we're not like, our brains do not work like that. But like, yeah, even if I invited you over just for a movie screening or whatever, just, you know, to be like, this is how we are people. This is how we are the human beings, you know? So it's like an attempt to kind of like reconnect to your, you know, actual human social aspect of you. And that's like really hard because the more creative you are and the more projects you do, that just that human, you know, that social creature just kind of like, you know, it just kind of like goes, you know, it's in the background, and you could completely lose that part of you if you don't make an attempt to be that person, to be that, you know, be a friend or be like, come out to the party, you know, whatever, let's get drinks.
Well,
like,
you know,
we hung out a few times and we didn't mention movies and it was fun. So what the hell, you know?
Maybe not. Well, I mean, at least for me, I say I've gotten maybe more social and even better with people. Like this week, I'm booked. Yeah. I have to get up at almost 4 a.m. 5 days in a row, and I was on a film set with younger people recently. And I might have got someone to quit smoking. You know, we talked about relationships. I tried to help a girl who had just had a crazy breakup and super depressed. So I, honestly, I've had maybe just as meaningful and productive conversations and real connections on film
yeah,
sets
right. yeah, yeah.
That,
yeah.
than at parties. So I don't have to go to party because I've been socializing right, all day.
Yeah. Yeah, you were you and I we were on a movie together and we were just like we just had to go in a, like a different room and be real quiet. So we were just like whispering conversations for like 3 right. hours. And it was like yeah. therapy. It was great. It was like, you know, it was yeah, that was yeah, totally needed that. I totally needed that conversation. You were there. We were able mm-hmm. to do it and we were getting paid oh, while yeah. doing it. It's like, yeah, cool.
Yeah, I mean, listen, everyone's going through things, you know, we're real people. I don't know a single person that doesn't have a problem. And, you know, if you can have a little downtime and, you know, be a support to everyone on set at one moment, it also brings you closer as a team. And mm-hmm. it's, you know, I don't think there's any such thing as personal and work being separate. It's all together, it's, yeah. Especially on a film set.
Yeah, on a film set, you're like you're thrown in with like a new family each time.
Yeah, definitely.
And it could be 12 hours, it could be 3 hours, it could be, you know, 30 days, but you're thrown into a new family, and now you got to figure
right.
out that family. You know,
yeah,
even if
yeah.
it's for your own survival, you got to figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah, I try to be on functional, efficient families. I'm joining a new film family this Tuesday, and it seems really great. But I've also been in some toxic families and. Oh God, no, I feel like I needed therapy after.
That's like a regular family too, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
come on. Yeah.
Well, Sean, we are way over time and I want to take up more of your time, but we gotta go. So just give us any final thoughts or if there's anything on your mind.
It's like Jerry Springer's final thoughts.
Yeah, yeah.
Damn. Thank you for letting me talk about the film Megan and Screamwalkers and stuffs.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's all. Just thank you. I appreciate your
that's
friendship,
all.
Your time. Yeah.
Likewise, really we appreciate you. And where can people find you? Social website.
You can't find me. I'm in Minnesota. You can't find me. That's why I came
there
here.
There you go.
I came here for peace and quiet, and you know, I didn't quite get that here.
No.
As of December 8th or January 9th. Jesus Christ. Yeah, okay. I'm a month late.
As of January 9th.
As of January 9th, 2026, it has not been chill in Minnesota, in Minneapolis.
No. Well, I mean, when you're part of the
looking
Leering
out the window,
Center.
I'm like, oh my God. No.
Are you part of the Somalian conspiracy? The Somalian Leering Center?
That was one group I tried to, you know, hang out with as soon as I got here. And I didn't quite gel. Yeah.
That's one way to finance your movie. Open a bunch of Leering Centers and improperly diagnose people as autistic. That's a really great way to raise money.
If the film thing doesn't
movies.
Work out, then yeah, that's the backup.
There you go.
No, but I'm on, you could find, yeah, Sean Q King, Facebook, Instagram, blah, 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 all that
all right.
crap. I'm trying to stay off of that stuff right now.
Yes. Good.
But it's not really working out that much, but you know, whatever. Yeah, Sean Q King.
Yeah.
You can look up Screamwalkers, Screamwalkers movie on Facebook, Screamwalkers on Instagram, TikTok, yada yada, that stuff. Yeah.
Speaking of that, TikTok, your time is up, Sean Q King. And now we're going back to the studio for more. It came from the radio with Mark Torres.
You had any honor. You would listen to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. Kapla!
Now, back to our show.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From The Radio. Join us right here any week on this radio station. If you miss any part of this show,
tough,
go to our newly revised website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Check us out on such places as btd.radio, sci-fi.radio. Check us out on our places such as Facebook, Instagram, YouTube page, Twitter.
And always follow the cost-benefit ratio. If the benefits outweigh the costs, do it. If the costs outweigh the benefits, don't do it. Or
just Google It Came From The Radio.
And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to It Came From The Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.